Before I begin the sermon this morning, I'm delighted to say that as of now you can actually follow our service live on a Sunday morning on Zoom. If you go onto our parish website, St Paul's Anglican Church Athens, you will get the login address for the Zoom service. The liturgy begins at 10:15, but we're asking you please to have logged in by 10 o'clock. And we're only live Zooming the liturgy through to the peace, in other words, the ministry of the word, and then the live Zoom will finish. But please do look on that website and join us for live Zoom on Sunday mornings. So this sermon was preached at St Paul's Anglican Church in Athens on the 18th Sunday of Trinity 2020, which is October the 11th. The readings are Philippians 4, 1-9, and Matthew 22, verses 1-14, which is the parable of the wedding banquet. At a religious rally, the preacher was famous for his fire and brimstone sermons as he addressed the pressing subject of God's judgment. Among the familiar phrases at such a rally, he used the phrase, "and there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth," a phrase that he may have picked up well from today's Gospel reading in St Matthew's Gospel. But someone in the audience shouted out, "But I don't have any teeth," to which the preacher responded, "And teeth will be provided." Today's gospel is set within the image of a wedding banquet. This is a popular image in the gospels, and allegorically it is Christ who is usually considered to be the bridegroom of these wedding parables, with the corollary that the bride is his church. Indeed, in the new marriage ceremony of the Church of England, these words follow. "Marriage is given that as man and woman grow together in love and trust, they shall be united with one another in heart, body and mind, as Christ is united with his bride, the Church." So in this formulary of the Anglican marriage ceremony, the connection between bridegroom and bride is overtly stated. It's so plain that you don't have to read anything into the language to develop the image. Weddings were great social occasions and cultural life in the setting of the scriptures. Indeed, they still are in the countries of the East and here in Greece. They're huge events, and in smaller villages everyone will turn out to the wedding feast, to the marriage banquet. No expense is spared, and the food and drink never seem to run out. When it did run out at a wedding in Cana of Galilee, Christ was there as a guest, and he ensured that the wine supply was restored. In St Luke's Gospel, this story of a wedding feast is presented rather differently to how it is presented in Matthew. It is a man who puts on a great banquet. All who are invited find excuses not to attend, so everyone from the surrounding streets gets swept up and gathered for a magnificent meal, because all are included. Our wedding banquet, as presented here today in Matthew's Gospel, has one really major difference. This is a banquet not about inclusion, but about the king's judgment. That's why Matthew includes this really difficult line about the man being thrown into hellfire for not being in his best suit at the wedding feast. Now, I know what you're all thinking. Tell us why this poor man should be treated so unfairly by the king who hosts the wedding meal for his son. After all, surely this parable is about God as the king and Christ as the son. You're all looking to me to give an explanation. I just know it, and I know whose side you are all on. The poor guy was just getting on with his normal everyday business, and suddenly a complete stranger comes along and tells him to stop what he's doing and come to a big wedding party. Maybe he was a street sweeper. Maybe he had a little stall or a rickety old cart from which he was trying to flog some watermelons or figs. Maybe he was sitting on a street pavement, trying to sell some little pots and pans or headscarves or something. The last thing on his mind was attending some posh wedding breakfast. So he turns up and sits down on the couches that are placed around the low tables and anticipates some decent food and drink, a real treat. The father of the bridegroom arrives and spots that he is still in his dusty old work clothes, and he gets singled out. We have to assume that somehow all the other folk who had been gathered up must have gone home and washed and put on the appropriate apparel, but we're not told. This poor man singled out is bound and thrown into what Matthew calls the outer darkness. And we have to hope that this man has his own teeth. But how can this be fair? How can God act in this way? The answer must lie in the fact that Matthew is not telling us a story to help us understand inclusion, which is probably St. Luke's intention in his version, but rather to remind us that a central part of our faith is that we are judged. It may not be the most popular part of Christian apologetics, and judgment is not a theme commonly heard in our pulpits these days, unless your preacher happens to be one of those fire and brimstone types. We all prefer gentle Jesus, meek and mild, and the central theme of love and anything goes. That's a more palatable message. However, there is no way to sweeten the bitter pill for the sanitized taste buds of modern day men and women. If we say and believe that Christ has died, Christ is risen, Christ will come again, as we say in our liturgy frequently, for what will Christ come again? What is the purpose of his return journey? In the crucifixion of Christ, with its sequence of resurrection and ascension into heaven, we might believe that everything has been accomplished. In fact, didn't Jesus even say that from the cross? So it's okay, isn't it, to present the good news of God's love in Christ as supreme, and our message, our gospel, is only about love. Yes, but how do we fit the themes of Advent into this one-sided model of the gospel? When I was young, we used to preach in Advent on what we called the four last things. These were death, judgment, heaven and hell. Maybe only one of these four would rank high in the popularity scale these days. The wedding banquet is a parable told to remind us that there is judgment, that Christ is our judge. We sing so many hymns about Christ as judge, but because we like a good tune, we often don't realise what it is that we're singing. There is one hymn based on another scriptural story of the arrival of a bridegroom, often set to a wonderful Vaughan Williams tune. Behold, the bridegroom cometh in the middle of the night, and blessed is he whose loins are girt, whose lamp is burning bright. But woe to that dull servant whom the master shall surprise, with lamp untrimmed, unburning, and with slumber in his eyes. This wedding banquet parable from Matthew is not about feasting and rejoicing, not about including all and sundry, but about judgment, and as a lesson to the church. Matthew's gospel at times is a very churchy gospel, and you may remember a few weeks ago that I said it's only in Matthew's gospel that the word church, ecclesia, appears from the lips of Jesus. We're being reminded that although we may feel that all is well with us within the church, and that our future relationship with God is secure, and that it's only those outside the church who will have issues, that sense that we're all right because we are the insiders, this just won't do. It won't do for you and for me. We too are constantly under the judgment of God. But thankfully, God does not see as we do, and does not think as we do. He has sent his only Son into the world not to condemn the world, but to redeem it. This places us under the judgment of his kingdom of justice and compassion. This message is not lost on St. Paul when he communicates with the Christians at Philippi. Those early Christians lived and practiced their faith with the belief that Christ's second coming was imminent. The Lord is near, Paul tells them. This is urgent, so live and behave accordingly. He doesn't tell them just to sit back, do nothing, and wait, because it won't be long, but rather to rejoice, to be known by their gentleness, to offer prayer and supplications with thanksgiving. And finally, beloved, whatever is true, whatever is honourable, whatever is just, whatever is pure, whatever is pleasing, whatever is commendable, if there is any excellence, and if there is anything worthy of praise, think about these things. We are called by God to be clothed with these things. These are our wedding garments, and it's up to us if we choose to wear them. Today's parable is but a sharp reminder that there is no room for complacency, no backsliding. We must always be alert, ready for when the bridegroom arrives. And teeth will be provided.